You're listening to Osho Radio. We make a program for you every other week with music from the world of Osho and a discourse by Osho that will last for half an hour. We play only a part of the discourse, but the whole discourse you can download through the website oshoworld.com. This 1 hour program is meant for you to relax and have a taste of meditation in your busy life in the marketplace. Just sit back, lay down in any way you feel comfortable, and just enjoy. The discourse today is from the series The Wild Geese and the Water, number 3. It is about love and freedom. Love cannot be there without freedom, and freedom cannot be there without love. They go together hand in hand. Osho is talking in this discourse about different kinds of love, how love starts, and how love eventually can become so big that you cannot hold it, you have to share it. This, Osho says, is real and pure love.
Would you please say something on the following words of the poet Khalil Gibran? When love beckons to you, follow him. Love possesses not, nor would it be possessed, for love is sufficient unto love. Love has no desire but to fulfill itself. Anil Bharati. Khalil Gibran is a poet but not a mystic. A poet is a dreamer. A mystic is a visionary, and the difference is vast. The difference is not only of quantity, but of quality. The poet looks not at the moon, but of the reflection of the moon in the troubled waters of the lake. He gets few glimpses here and there, but they are only glimpses and very vague. His perception is not clear, cannot be, because he has not passed through the alchemical process of meditation. The mind is there, between him and the reality. And the mind always interprets. It is a constant commentator. It never allows the reality to reach to you as it is. It distorts it. It polishes it. It changes it. It makes it according to its own gestalt, its own pattern. It gives it the shape of its own ideas. It colors it. Of course, something of the reality still lingers on, but it is only something fragmentary. As if the poet has seen a beautiful dream. But the mystic knows it directly, immediately. There is no interpretation. Existence and the mystic are in deep communion. The poet is only once in a while in a sort of communication, but never of communion. In communication, you remain separate, bridged for the moment, but still separate. In communion, you are no more, not only bridged for the moment, you are simply not there. It is not a question of creating a bridge. You are immersed. You are attuned. You are in a state of at-one-ment with reality. Remember this before we start meditating on these beautiful words of Khalil Gibran. They are beautiful. He is one of the most perceptive poets of this age. But he is a poet, not a mystic. He is not a Buddha, not a Christ. He has not seen reality. He has dreamt about it. His dreams are beautiful, psychedelic, but dreams are dreams. Even if sometimes they reflect the reality, they only reflect it. They are far away echoes are maybe echoes of the echoes of the echoes. Khalil Gibran says, when love beckons to you, follow him. It is implied in the statement that as if love is something outside you and you have to follow it. In fact, when love is there, you are not there. There is nobody to follow it. Love is overwhelming. Love is a dissolution of the ego. Who is there to follow? Who is there not to follow? If there is somebody still to follow or not to follow, then it is not love. Then it must be something else. Maybe biology, chemistry, psychology, but not love. It must be instinctive. It must be lust parading as love, camouflaged as love. It must be something animal. When love is there, the lover is not. They can't exist together. That is impossible. That is not in the nature of things. They cannot coexist. If the lover is there, love is not. If love is there, you will not find the lover anywhere. Then who is to follow? Who is to hear the call of love? And who has to go with love? If somebody is there to follow, then something is missing. Something very basic and fundamental is missing. The statement is beautiful, but it has not come out of meditativeness. It is a faraway echo. He has dreamt about it. If you ask the Buddha, he will say, when love is there, you are not. And there is no way not to follow it. There is no way to go against it. You are it. But then you have to understand the multidimensionality of the phenomenon of love. The lowest dimension is animal. Ninety-9% people never go beyond it. So when they hear words like this, when love beckons to you, follow him, they interpret it according to themselves. In all the languages of the world, we have this expression, falling in love. It is significant. Why falling in love? Because for 99% people, it is really a fall. They are going downwards to the world of instincts, biology, physiology. They are being dominated by the hormones, by the glands. by their body chemistry. It is happening in animals. It is happening in the trees. It is nothing special. It is nothing human. I will not say when your biology beckons to you, follow it. I will say watch. Be aware. Be alert. Because if you are not aware, you are bound to be taken over, dominated by the lowest element in you, by the most peripheral in you. You will be dominated and guided by unconscious natural forces. That's what is happening in the name of love. People are simply behaving like animals. It is a fall. But there are higher dimensions of love too. The first kind of love appears as if it is coming from the outside. It really comes from the outside because it comes from the circumference and the center has to follow the circumference. The circumference is the outermost thing in you. It is outside you. You are far away from the circumference at the deepest shrine of your being. When love calls you forth, that means it is coming from the periphery, somewhere from the outside. A man falls in love with a woman, or a woman falls in love with a man. But it is nothing. It's special to man. It is not part of the dignity of man. It is a fall. And it will bring misery to you. And remember, it will be possessive. And also, if you carefully watch, you will see, it will not only be possessive, deep down there will be a desire to be possessed too. You are already possessed by nature. Now, it will have other implications. The man will be possessed by the woman will be possessed by the man, and the whole conflict of the so-called love. Whenever you are possessed by somebody, there is a dichotomy in you. You want to be possessed and yet you want to be free. There is a conflict within you. You want to be possessed because that makes you feel valuable, possessable. Somebody is paying respect to you. Somebody is thinking of you as a treasure. So you feel good that you are possessed. But on the other hand, simultaneously you feel that you are being reduced into a commodity. It may be a treasure, but a treasure has no consciousness. You are becoming a thing. You are being reduced into the world of objects. You are becoming an object of possession. You are losing your subjectivity and the freedom of your subjectivity. Hence the conflict. And you will be in misery, because whatsoever you do will only fulfill half the desire, and the other half will remain frustrated. If you allow yourself to be possessed, your desire to be free remains unfulfilled. It fights. If you don't allow yourself to be possessed, you are free, but something in you goes on insisting that nobody possesses you. Does it mean nobody values you? Does it mean nobody is bothered by you? Nobody takes any note that you are worthless? At this level of love, misery is a natural consequence. Watch it, because through watchfulness you can rise above it. You can start rising in love rather than falling in love. Watchfulness becomes like a ladder from the lowest to the highest. The second dimension is closer to what Khalil Gibran says in his second statement: love possesses not, nor would it be possessed, for love is sufficient unto love. But again he gives a wrong reasoning why love is not going to possess and is not going to be possessed. He says, because love is sufficient unto itself. That's not so. Love is not sufficient unto itself. Love needs to be shared. There is an immense overflowing energy which needs to be shared. The flower is not sufficient unto itself. It needs the winds and the sun so that it can release its hidden splendor, its fragrance, its perfume. If it is not allowed to release its perfume, it will be in deep suffering. Love suffers most when there is nobody to share it. The greatest suffering comes when you have to give and there is nobody to receive it. Love possesses not, that is true. Nor would it be possessed, that is true. But the reason for it given by Khalil Gibran is not right. It is poetic, but it has no insight into the reality of love. Love is non-possessive because Love's very essence is freedom. If you love a person, you would like the person to be absolutely free. And if you love somebody, you can love only if you have loved yourself before it. That is a precondition. You cannot love others if you are not in deep love with yourself. The first, the foremost love is love for oneself. When this flame starts burning in you, love for oneself, it has not been told to you for centuries. In fact, just the opposite has been taught. Don't love yourself. It is selfish, they say. Love others. Even Christians who think they are following Christ have misinterpreted his tremendously significant statement. He says, love your enemies like yourself. They have taken only half part of it. They say, love your enemies. But they have forgotten the basic condition. Jesus says, love your enemies like yourself. But if you don't love yourself, in what way you are going to love your enemies? What will be the criterion? First you have to love yourself. Then you can even love your enemies. What to say about friends? What to say about lovers? The first love has to happen within yourself. It is something inner. It happens only when you become silent, aware, meditative. When you get out of the mind, mind is possessive. Mind is dictatorial. Mind is a despot. It wants to dominate because the center of the mind is the ego. And the ego can ride on anything. Any horse will do. Money will do. Power will do. Knowledge will do. Asceticism will do. Virtue will do. Love will do. Even love. Even the love will be converted into a horse and the ego can ride on it. Love is non-possessive only when it is not of the mind. But Khalil Gibran knows nothing of the no mind. Meditation means the state of no mind. Love should arise in a state of no mind. You have to prepare the state of no mind for love to happen. It does not come from the outside. It does not come from somewhere else. When you are silent, it springs within yourself. It blooms within yourself. Meditation functions like a spring. And the flowers that have been waiting for the spring suddenly open up. Your inner being becomes so full of perfume. It is so fragrant. You are so overflowing with fragrance. You have to share it. And it is so much that you cannot be miserly about it. So is the truth about love. When you love yourself, when your love has exploded, when it has become a reality within you, you share it. It is not sufficient unto itself. It needs sharing. Even truth needs sharing. Buddhahood needs sharing. Christ consciousness needs sharing. It is irresistible. It has to be shared. There is no way to avoid it. Otherwise, why in his old days, when Buddha was 82, he was still traveling and talking to people and saying to people, he was ill, he was old, he was getting every day weaker, but he was still traveling. His disciples were saying that, now you please stop. And he would say, I cannot. I have to give. To the last of my breath, I have to give. And actually, that's what happened. Love, truth, bliss. There is an intrinsic core in them. They need to be shared. They are not sufficient unto themselves. Sharing is part, but they are not possessive. The reason is totally different. The reason is that love basically gives freedom. It gives freedom to oneself, it gives freedom to others. A love that becomes a bondage is not love. It is lust. It is animal. It is not human. Love gives freedom. Then it becomes human. But still it is a kind of relatedness. There is one more dimension to love. In the first, love is a biological need. In the second, it is a psychological sharing. In the third, you are love. In the first, it is a relationship, a possessiveness. In the second, it is a relatedness, a friendship, a friendliness. In the third, you are love itself. Your very being is love. You radiate love. Only then, love has come to its crescendo. It has achieved the ultimate, the last. You can call it God. Jesus exactly calls God is love. I would like to change the statement just a little bit. The same words, but a different arrangement. I would like to call love is God. Because when you say God is love, it simply means love is one of the attributes of God. There may be many others. I say to you, love is God. God itself is nothing but an attribute of love. It is godliness.
So fine, I'm letting Talking about pure love.
The music in the program of today before the discourse was by Milarepa and the song Freedom. After that you heard Russian fiddle music from Rashispuram and morning celebration music from Pune. After the discourse there was Miten with the song Pure Love, an instrumental piece of music from the world of Osho called Spiritual Heart, and we finish with a vocal song called I Just Close My Eyes. Goodbye everybody, take care, and we wish you all a beautiful and strong start of the new year. Namaste.
Smile.